This episode of the Mass Film Room podcast is currently unsponsored. If you are interested in sponsoring us, please reach out to us on our socials, on Twitter, or on Instagram, at Mavs Film Room. If you're here just to listen to the podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast to never miss an episode. And if you're a Mavs fan who's online, be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Mavs Film Room, so you can interact with our great community of Mavs fans and never miss some of the great content that we put out. So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Go Mavs. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast. We're coming to you here on Sunday, March 31st, 2024, at just after 9 p.m. Central Time. It's been about an hour since the Mavericks defeated the Houston Rockets, the hottest team in the NBA, who was on an 11-game win streak. The Mavericks dismantled them in this game, final score of 125-107, which was honestly not even this close. The Mavericks took it to them from the beginning, thanks to Luka Doncic, who was on a mission tonight. He finished the game with 47 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists, making 9 of 16 three-pointers. I believe that ties a career high in made threes for Luka. In addition to him, the role players brought support today too. PJ Washington had 12 points, 6 rebounds. He went 3 for 5 from 3. Kyrie Irving chipped in with 24 points, 7 assists, 3 rebounds. Thought Dante Exum was big off the bench tonight, 13 points, 5 for 5, perfect from the field, continued to be the connector that the Mavericks have seen all season long. And the Mavs are on a roll now. They tie a season-high win streak of 7 games. They finished the month of March winning 11 of their last 12 games. And now they head to April for the final, 8 games of the season before the playoffs. The Mavericks, most importantly, moved up to the 5th seed for tonight. That's the big story. And of course, our number one in the Southwest Division now over the New Orleans Pelicans. So it's been a great month of March for the Mavericks. And I'm joined here with Vinay Chimitti to talk more about it. Vinay, how are you feeling today?
Feeling awesome. Team did me proud this week.
They did. I mean, what an important road trip this was for the Mavericks. Two huge games against Sacramento in the early part of this week. The Mavericks blew out Sacramento on Tuesday night, second night of a back-to-back, a very impressive win. But arguably more impressive, as we said, was the win Friday night against Sacramento, a game that they, I think, needed to have as well to gain sole possession of the sixth seed in the Western Conference. And they delivered with a clutch win. It was an ugly win, but the Mavericks played with grit, with force, determination, and they came out on top against Sacramento, who was putting up a good fight in that game. So, and then tonight, of course, blew out the Rockets. Now the Mavs are the owners of the longest win streak in the NBA.
Yeah, I think the defense has to get a lot of credit. I think besides the first half of the Kings game where the Kings kind of came out on fire, I think the Mavs defense has done a really good job these three games. Jalen Green today was one of the hottest stars in the NBA coming into today. He really didn't make that much of an impact. I know he had a few finishes at the rim, but he just really didn't impact the game like he has during the Rockets' 10-game streak. During the two Kings games, Sabonis was held in check by the Mavericks. Fox was really held in check by the Mavericks. I mean, really in that second game where the Kings were closer to winning as opposed to the first game, like Harrison Barnes and Keon Ellis were the ones that were killing the Mavericks in that game, not the stars. So, like, I think Jason Kidd just kind of has this, like, I feel like he has a good reputation in terms of like being able to shut down the other team's star. Like I've seen it enough over these 3 years, like when they kind of have time to game plan for a team, kind of like figure out like what the best defensive strategies are for certain stars. Tonight was Jalen Green, if you're calling him a star. The other two games against Sabonis and Fox, like Jason Kidd and the coaching staff, I feel like they do a good job with defensive game plans.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is very fair to call Jalen Green a star. And I think he was the leading contender for Western Conference Player of the Month in the month of March. I mean, the Rockets had only lost one game in March before tonight. After tonight, I don't know. You might have to give the Western Conference Player of the Month for March to Luka. But in any case, I mean, Jalen Green was held in check tonight. Just 12 points on 5 of 15 shooting, 0 for 5 from 3. It's probably his worst game of the whole month.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, for all the spacing concerns or shooting concerns that we have with the starting five, like the reason that Derrick Jones and PJ start together, even though they can't necessarily make all their corner threes, is because they just give give the team some different defensive versatility, defensive length to be able to throw those guys out at stars. Like, imagine if we had these two guys during those two Clippers series, you know, when we had zero answers for Kawhi Leonard. Like, it's just such an impactful, massive difference to have these guys on the team this year. Like, and these are the type of players that matter a lot in playoff series when you're going to be playing the best of the best in the playoff series. Doesn't matter who the Mavericks play in a first round series, you're going to play a superstar. So, like, you need these kind of guys to have on your team to throw out people defensively. And, you know, couldn't be happier with, I guess, how the minimum signings went with, over the summer with Derek Jones Jr. and Dante Exum. I mean, you know, we need them to be healthy to be able to play all these games because it's just that important to the team as is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that Derek Jones Jr. gets enough credit for what he's done, especially since coming back into the starting lineup. After the trades were made for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, it was Josh Green that was starting at the three. But then after that pretty horrendous stretch that the Mavs had to end February and begin March, where they were the worst defense in the NBA since the All-Star break, Derrick Jones Jr. was put back in the starting lineup. Has made a huge difference. I mean, in the month of March, the Mavs have had a top 10 NBA defense this month and are inching closer to moving out of the bottom 10 in the NBA in defensive efficiency, which doesn't sound very impressive, but when you consider how bad the Mavericks were for the majority of the season, especially before the trades, I think that marks a good accomplishment for them.
Yeah, no, definitely. I kind of zoned out when you were speaking, not going to lie.
No, it's fine.
I was looking at the standings. Dude, you know what I just realized? I was doing the math in my head. Like, if the Mavericks were in the East right now, they'd be the 3 seed. They'd be 2 games behind Milwaukee for the 2 seed, despite everything that's happened this season with the ups and downs. And yeah, I know why you're shaking your head, because I've been alive on Earth for 27 years, and I feel like the Western Conference is better than the East every single one of those 27 years. Yep.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, like, how many times have we said this over our lifetime? You know.
Yeah. I mean, but for like all the downs that this Mavericks team has had, like, and I think this team is even better than what the record is right now. Like, I really believe that. I think this team would be a mid 51 team if they had like this team to start the season. So, like, the fact that the record is what it is, like with the injuries and all that, like, I said this before all this happened, like, I thought it was a W, like, at the trade deadline when we had the record that we had, like, and we had all that stuff going on. I mean, we had 3 different guys with broken noses over the span of a week. Like, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I mean, I totally forgot about that, but that just kind of puts in perspective, like, what kind of season it's been for the Mavericks up until this point. You know, with all the injury issues they had, Kyrie Irving missing close to a month in December, Dante Exum missing pretty much the entire month of January, Derek Lively being in and out of the lineup between December and February, too. So, I mean, you know, this recent win streak has been a product of better health and it's been a product of better talent. But you're now seeing it come together and it's made the Mavericks look scary. Like, I didn't think I'd be saying this at any point this season, but the Mavericks legitimately look scary. And I'm the type of fan that's always a little bit more cautious about, you know, hyping up the Mavs, but it's hard not to at this point. Like, when you watch them play, you have a lot of faith that they're going to go out there and win the game, or at least be in a position to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, you just have just unreal shot making with Luka and Kyrie. Like, people knock on the whole your turn, my turn thing, like basketball, but like, honestly, like, when those two have like isolations one-on-one, teams aren't trapping them. Like, there's not much better offense that the Mavericks can have, like, when those two are playing one-on-one versus nearly anyone in the NBA. And there's a reason why, I mean, people say this a lot about Luka, like, that he's the scariest individual player to scheme up against, like, even including Jokic, Giannis, all these guys. Like, I've heard this repeatedly from like the Zach Lowe's, the Jeff Van Gundy's. I've heard them say this, like, he's the scariest player in the league to like try to match up for. And now he has these rim runners. Now he has Kyrie, who Luka and Kyrie have never played in a playoff series together. Like, we don't even know what that looks like. The best that Luka's had as a sidekick was Jalen Brunson during that West Finals run. And Jalen Brunson wasn't Jalen Brunson he is today for the Knicks. As great as he was during that playoff run, he just wasn't as good as he is now. So, you know, I don't care who we play in the first round. I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but like, whoever we play, we're going to face a superstar. But at the end of the day, I think the player that the Mavericks have on their team is better than anyone they play in the West. And yes, that includes Jokic, but I'm going that far.
No, I would go that far too. I mean, call me biased, but I do think Luka Doncic right now is the best player in the world. And we'll maybe get to it in a second. I do believe that He should win MVP this year. But to your point about the Mavericks matching up against any team in the Western Conference, I mean, if you really look at it, I was thinking about this the other day. Outside of Jokic and the Nuggets, the Mavs might have the most playoff-tested superstars in the Western Conference field right now. Because
Clippers.
I guess the Clippers, but you know, they've just been so their playoff runs have been like marred by injury that I don't know if I mean I guess Kawhi Leonard, of course, is playoff tested.
And honestly, with the whole Clippers thing, like let's say hypothetically the Mavericks are in a crunch time situation, you know, all that Clippers history, all the James Harden history kind of sometimes can creep into fans' heads. And you know, with Luka and Kyrie, like Kyrie's hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history, literally in the clutch situation. Luka has a reputation already in his early career being a big time shot maker. So, like, yeah, even as I say, like the Clippers have more playoff experience amongst them, but like, you know, I'll take what our guys got.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Thunder. I mean, they've had a great regular season too, but they're a relatively inexperienced team when it comes to playoffs. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did play in that one playoff series against the Warriors his rookie year, but after that year, I don't believe that he's made the playoffs at any point in his career. Anthony Edwards, I don't, you know,
His first year,
I guess the Nuggets.
Second year in OKC. No, they played the Rockets in the first round in the bubble.
Oh, that's right.
And he was pretty bad in that series too.
Yeah, and he was a much younger player at that point. So
is Luka in that bubble, but
it's yeah, okay. I mean, we don't need to go down that path because I mean I don't think there's any discussion to be had about who is a better player between those two. I mean, you know, look, credit to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the improvement that he's shown since that series. But like, let's face it, Luka's a much more playoff experienced player. I mean, he's played in high leverage series against the Clippers 2 years in a row. He's made it to a Western Conference Finals. He's been an MVP candidate, I think, for the last three seasons, in my opinion, even though he hasn't won it. And the players around Shai also, like, they're all very young in their careers. They're either rookies or sophomore players. Like, these guys, you know, playoff experience matters. They're definitely talented, but playoff experience matters. And I think that, you know, you match up the Mavs to either OKC or Minnesota, and I like their chances against both those teams. I like their chances against the Clippers, too, even though the Clippers have these guys that we haven't been able to stop. You know, look at Michael Jordan. It took him three tries to beat the bad boy Pistons, but finally the third time he broke through and swept them. I believe that Luka and the Mavericks are capable of doing that this year after being unable to solve them in 2020 and 2021. The Mavericks have the kind of fortitude and mettle that I think battle-tested teams need. And, you know, the Mavs are a team on the rise right now. The Clippers are a team on the decline right now. And I'm not saying that it's going to continue into the playoffs, but I think just looking at the way that things are going right now, I would take the Mavericks over the Clippers in a playoff series too.
And think about those two Clipper series that, you know, the Mavericks had against them in the playoffs. Like, it was Luka and then, like, who? Like, in both those series. Like, honestly, was Trey Burke the most consistent player in both of those series?
I mean, he might have been the bubble series. Yeah. And in 2021, I mean, it was Tim Hardaway Jr., I think, that second time around because Porzingis wasn't really producing. Brunson got benched in that series. That was before he even became, you know, 2022 Brunson. So,
Was literally like the Jon Snow gif of him taking out the sword versus the whole army, like those two series. Like, that's just what it was. Like, I'm not trying to knock the people on those two teams, but it's just what it was. It was Luka against the whole team, basically. I think Boban started a couple of those games in the second time around.
He did.
Now you have Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, who hopefully nothing serious came out of the injury stuff today with him. But yeah, I'm confident about this team. But I mean, you know, they have to close out this stretch that I think they're going to be favored by Vegas to win all of these games. Like, you know, before the game when Vegas sets the lines, I would expect the Mavericks to be favored in nearly every one of them. Maybe the at Oklahoma City game, if both teams are still playing their guys, might be toss-up, and maybe Miami in Miami is a toss-up. But I mean, the way that both teams are playing, like the Mavericks are playing at a much higher level than Miami right now.
No, I agree. I mean, the Mavericks now own the title of hottest team in the NBA because they do have the longest active win streak in the NBA at 7. And yeah, you look at the opponents that they play to end the season, the Thunder in the final game of the season are the only team that they play that has a better record than the Mavericks right now. So, I mean, I would expect the Mavs to be favored in all these games down the stretch of the season.
It'll just, I guess, come down to who's suiting up for the teams going into these games, because teams might rest guys, take it easy here down the stretch. But I expect the Mavericks to be playing to win every single game, because with the way that the standings are right now, you're still not in the clear yet. I mean, yes, they do have at this point a 2.5 game lead over Sacramento for the eighth seed, I
Who?
think. I guess the team that's currently up by 19 against Utah, but the team that we handled in on their home court this past week, and a team that continues to somehow only play home games.
There's no way they're at home against the Jazz.
They are. I swear that every time I turn on a Sacramento Kings game, they're at home. I've seen them play on the
Feels
road
like
like
it.
once this season. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, the Mavericks have a 2.5 game lead right now, and it's probably going to go back down to 2 games after the Kings win this game against Utah. They have a 2 game lead over Phoenix plus the tiebreaker for the 7 seeds. So, the Mavs are creating a little bit of separation with some of the play-in teams, but I wouldn't say that it's fully put away yet. So the Mavericks do need to keep playing for all these games. And look, the Mavs have a chance to move up in the standings to the 4th seed if things break their way here in the final 8 games of the season.
Yeah, like I think, the Mavericks have the easiest strength of schedules of these three teams, but I don't think strength of schedule still accounts for the fact that the Warriors are going to be fighting for their seasons on Tuesday, basically. Like, that's
Yeah,
how tight the
exactly.
standings are. Now Tuesday is the biggest game of the season.
It is. I mean, look, and the Warriors are on a 4-game win streak too. After kind of having a bit of a cold stretch, they've won 4 straight games. So they're never a team that you can take for granted. I mean, this would probably be the first time that the Mavs are facing both Steph and Draymond in the lineup for the Warriors. So I mean, that comes with its
And it'll
own
be
unique
tough for the Mavericks
challenges.
because they've been on a basically 2 week road trip, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is the fifth game of a 5-game road trip. I mean, you know
Everyone,
that. Yeah, go
and they
ahead.
have a game the next day against the Hawks on Wednesday. So everyone's kind of like, naturally everyone's going to be looking forward to getting home, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly. The
that's not going to be the easiest game.
Hawks game is on Thursday, but yeah, they do have that back to back on
Okay.
Thursday and Friday against the Hawks and Warriors in Dallas. But yeah, I mean, look at the road trip that the Mavs have been on these past 2 weeks. Like you said, they went to Utah, then they played 2 games in Sacramento, and they came to Houston tonight to play that game. And now they're going back to Northern California to play 1 game against the Warriors in San Francisco. Like it's unfortunate scheduling, but that's just how it is. It would be great to close out the road trip 5-0, and continue to, just continue to run through the NBA here to close the season.
Yeah, and I think the last 3 games they've just beaten teams that they're better than. That's just kind of like type of stuff that we should expect from them. And I still have my same concerns about, honestly, I think shooting's probably my biggest concern with the team the rest of the way. I don't know necessarily how much I can count on all these guys to hit open threes, especially from the corners. I don't think PJ can shoot from the corners right now, and Derrick Jones is still kind of like shaky from three. So that's my biggest concern probably the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's also my biggest concern too. I mean, the Mavericks have hit 20 plus threes as a team in 2 of the last 3 games. The first game against Sacramento, they hit 22. Tonight they hit 24. So it's been good to see that of late their shooting has picked up. But again, 9 of those 24 came from Luka. Tim Hardaway struggled, I think, until the second half. PJ Washington, I think, is still pretty up and down to where I don't fully trust him as a shooter right now, but yeah, I think, like you said, that's my biggest concern around the team. But look, like what we've seen out of the Mavericks these last few games is that when their three-pointer is hitting, they're very, very, very difficult to beat. Like they will blow out teams because their defense is suffocating. They have two of the best shot makers in the game in Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They have really tough paint scorers in Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford. And now you add, the strength of hot 3-point shooting, it makes the Mavs difficult to beat. And so I guess that begs the question, what are ways that teams can beat the Mavericks? Like, what should they be expecting from other teams to try and stop them?
I think, Ime Udoka didn't really blitz today, which I found surprising because I think without Sengun, they can rotate and recover quicker. But he just refused to do it until the third quarter. And then that's when, he kind of stymied Luka a little bit offensively, but still, he didn't really stymie him when he scored 47 points in 30 minutes. But I think teams are mostly, for the most part, going to trap him. I feel like that's today was a good glimpse in the Hawks game, or two good examples of why you see teams blitz him as much as you do. Because if he gets one-on-one coverage against, you know, 99% of the league, he's going to win that matchup, and he's going to embarrass you while he does it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't play one-on-one coverage against Luka, but then the issue is that, like, you have Kyrie Irving waiting as the pressure release valve if you blitz Luka. So, I mean, that's what makes it really tough to beat the Mavericks. And why I do believe that outside of Denver, they might be, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself, but I think outside of Denver, like, they might be the most formidable team in the West right now, just when you consider who they have.
No, definitely. Not much to say much on that regard, but what do you think about the whole MVP race in terms of, I don't know, everyone was using the team record as the biggest knock to Luka's ordeal. Seems like, man, the Mavericks have grabbed national headlines lately. What
dude,
do you think?
I think you have to give him the MVP now. I mean, this is someone who's averaging 34, almost 10 rebounds per game, 9 assists per game, or the other way around. Basically, almost averaging 34, 10 and 9, which has never been done before in NBA history. The team record is now starting to reflect that production. I think you have to give Luka the MVP. He's been due, and he's on a mission right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of games left. There's going to be a lot of narratives to be played out. I really do think if, like, the Mavericks can get the 4 or 5 seed, that I think voters are going to kind of, like, realize, like, holy cow, this dude's averaging 34, 9, and 9. Like, what are we doing here? He's completely changed his game in terms of his shooting. Like, I know he's been able to make these threes before in the past, but, I mean, just the different type of shots that he's taking now with catch and shoot, and just kind of overall confidence in his shooting, just makes him, like, I don't know how you stop the guy, especially when he's, like, making threes as consistently as he is. Like, I don't know what you do. That's why teams trap him and blitz him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's improved his shooting. He's adapted his game, honestly, in embracing Jason Kidd's, you know, desire to play faster. I mean, the Mavericks, in the beginning of the season, we wondered, like, can they sustain this faster pace that they're playing? And the answer to that question has been yes. You know, they're top 10 in pace. I think they're 8th in pace. They've been at that level throughout the season. I mean, he has really taken it to heart to push the ball in transition. And him being, like, one of the greatest passers this game has ever seen, it's created a lot of transition opportunities for the Mavericks, even if he's not necessarily the one always running down the floor.
Yeah, and I think, transition offense is directly helped if you're able to get stops, and the Mavericks have gotten stops lately. They've been able to run out in transition. There have been times, especially during that Kings game on Friday, where Mavericks had really nothing going on in half-court offense, but they got some buckets in transition just because they were able to get defensive stops on the Kings. Like, offense and defense go hand in hand. Like, it just doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, you can use both to complement each other. That's what the great teams do. That's what the Celtics, Nuggets of the world do.
Yeah, exactly. And that was something the Mavs were sorely lacking last season, and honestly these last few seasons. And it gives you extra possessions to try and score, because when you're just purely a half court team, you know, you play at a slower pace, you have less possessions per game. It makes every possession that more important. So any possession where you miss a three-pointer or have a turnover, it's just that much more costly. When you're able to get transition opportunities, it gives you extra chances to score and gives you some more leeway if you do have a bad possession or two in the half court.
No, definitely. And that's, you know, I think I said it earlier in the season, I haven't said it as much lately, but I said, serious stuff is going to happen for the Mavericks until they start to defend. So, you know, they're starting to do that. That's why teams are starting to take them seriously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the defense has just been, like, we have not seen this kind of defense in many years from the Mavericks. I mean, I know the 2022 Western Conference Finals year was a good, good defensive team. That was one of the biggest mysteries as to how they were. This year, I feel like they're doing it a little bit differently. I mean, yes, they do, you know, they are showing more effort in perimeter defense, but they just have, you know, the rim protectors that they've really lacked since Tyson Chandler, in my opinion. Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively have both been just incredible rim protectors.
Yeah, you can't say enough. Like, whatever prices that they gave up for Gafford and PJ in the trade, I know PJ's not shooting the best, but, I mean, he's been absolutely worth it, and Gafford's been worth it too. Like, the price that they traded for those guys, and, you know, the difference of the Mavericks in terms of what their ceiling was before the trade and after the trade, unanimously throughout the league, like, I'll do those trades again. 10 times out of 10.
Without a doubt. And I mean, I think we both like those trades when they happened. In a sense, it's not shocking that the Mavs have taken off because we knew, you know, Luka has been playing at this level the entire season. It's not like he's just recently elevated his play. He's been playing at this level the whole season. They just got better talent around him, and all of a sudden the Mavs look like a contender.
And for a long time, I think a lot of like Mavericks fans, especially the last 2 years when we were just getting pummeled on the glass, like we kept saying like the Mavericks need more size, the Mavericks need more size. But like the underrated part about Gafford and PJ is that they're both actual legit athletes. Like if you compare, if you do athletic testing between PJ Washington and Grant Williams, whatever athletic test you want to do, NFL combine, NBA combine, whatever, it's not a contest. Like it just, and I know it sounds simple, but like athletes matter in the NBA. Like we're talking about a super physical sport determined by the with the best of the best athletes. Like you have to be a good athlete to like be able to sustain yourself on both ends of the floor and, you know, be able to contribute on the floor like PJ does defensively and like all the other stuff. Like I'm so impressed with his overall game with everything besides shooting. I wasn't expecting it to be that good, and like defensively I thought it'd be like some more ups and downs that it's been. I feel like every game he's been on it defensively, maybe a couple bad games, but he's just been on it defensively. Gafford, I didn't expect to be starting at this time of the season, but he's earned it. Maybe it's even, I still think Lively's better on defense, but like offensively, it's not close in my opinion. Like Gafford's able to catch and finish a little bit better than Lively, set screens a little bit better than Lively, and Lively's still good in those departments. But I think Gafford's just like a better offensive version of Lively at this point in their careers.
Yeah, and it takes a little bit of pressure off of Derek Lively that he's not starting anymore. He's a rookie at the end of the day, as often as he doesn't look like one, and as often as he hasn't looked like one this season, we have to remember that he is a rookie. And so in the playoffs, I think having a five-year veteran will make a difference. And we know Derek Lively, what he's capable of when he comes into the game. And so I think it's just the Gafford acquisition was a match made in heaven. PJ Washington, I didn't expect him to be this good on defense. I thought he'd be a defensive upgrade, but he's been legitimately a lockdown defender for the Mavericks. You know, if he can ever figure out how to shoot the three ball at a high level, which I do believe can happen at some point in his career, I mean, he's going to be an extremely valuable piece for the Mavs. He is right now. His passing has been extremely impressive to me. That's been one thing that's really stood out to me. He makes the right play almost all the time out of the short roll as he delivered the game-winning assist to Dante Exum against Sacramento on Friday night. You know, honestly, both him and Gafford have been really good passing the ball, and it's just opened up the Mavs offense even more.
Yeah, it's honestly, everyone on the Mavericks that plays has to be a good passer. It's a requirement. Like, Luka's going to get trapped. You have to be able to make quick decisions on a 4-on-3. Jason Kidd calls it advantage basketball. Like, everyone on the floor has to be able to make the right pass and the right read. It's not super complicated. I know it's harder. It's easier said than done when I'm sitting in a chair and these guys are on a basketball court against flying defenses rotating, having to make the right pass at the right time. But that's just what it has to be. And Gafford, like you can just see it just watching the games, he's improved his passing from his Mavericks debut to today against the Rockets. Like you can see like a legit just difference in his passing. And yeah. Yeah, I don't want to knock the guy, but I genuinely, this might be too early to say, but I genuinely think PJ might be a better defender than Dorian was. And I definitely agree with this in the sense of I'd rather have PJ at the four than Dorian at the four in terms of like being able to like handle bigger guys in a switch situation, because like the way NBA defenses are played, like that's going to happen sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, PJ Washington has been a revelation. Like you said, I don't think we've seen that kind of defense from anyone in a Mavericks uniform. I mean, Dorian deserves a lot of credit and deserves his flowers for what he
did. For sure, and he's better. Dorian's better on guards and point of attack defense, I would say, than PJ. But like, you know, not to it's hard to compare the two. But if you're just asking me, like, what's more valuable for me for defense in the NBA today, like, I would take PJ.
Yeah, I mean, PJ Washington, I think, is a bit stronger than Dorian was. He defends better against bigger players. You're not at as much of a size disadvantage if he does get matched up against another big. So, and look, the scheme has been tailored for the personnel that they have, and it's finally coming together now. I mean, there were so many possessions today against Houston where they would play aggressive level of screen defense, and then Luka would drop back, intercept a pass, and then they'd go on a fast break. I mean, that kind of defensive connection is something we haven't seen probably since 2022.
Yeah, I think the coach, I mean, I said it earlier, but the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit. I know we were hard on them during that losing streak and calling for people's jobs and whatnot, but I mean, they turned it around quickly. I have to give Jason Kidd, Jared Dudley, Sean Sweeney, the whole coaching staff. Alex Jensen doesn't get enough credit for the job he's done with the bigs. Can't really say enough about how they turned around the season, because like the defensive schemes during that bad stretch just looked rough, looked really rough. Guys had no idea where they were. Guys were leaving people open for three just continuously. Sometimes it happens still. Like, you're not going to be perfect on defense, but definitely the biggest difference with the Mavericks is they've completely taken away the rim from other teams, and that's massive.
Oh yeah. I mean, like I said, the kind of rim protection that we see from the Mavericks right now is something that I don't think I've seen since they had Tyson Chandler in 2011 and 2014. I mean, this is like truly new territory for the Mavericks to have two rim protectors that can, you know, that other teams fear, quite frankly, guys that will go and swat the shit out of players who drive to the basket, who pack their shots. These are two guys you don't want to see at the rim. So it discourages a lot of players from driving to the rim. And now that, you know, you see the buy-in from guys like Luka and Kyrie on perimeter defense, they're trying a lot harder. And you have Derek Jones Jr., you have PJ Washington able to, you know, switch and rotate on the perimeter with their length. And all of a sudden, like, it's made the Mavericks a competent defensive team.
Yeah, I mean, Luka hasn't even been his, like, 100% physical self during this stretch of games, and he's been, you know, playing pretty decent on defense. Like, he holds up well one-on-one. He does really well when he's asked to in certain situations where he has to guard a big down low. Like, he's just so strong and does a really good job using his hands to, you know, poke the ball away from bigs in those situations. So, I mean, like I said, like, people had a, you know, people were saying all this stuff about, can you build a competent defense around Luka and Kyrie when they're your two best players? So I'm like, yeah, you can. You have to have maybe the right pieces on your team, and you have to maybe be able to scheme it up properly. But if everyone's on the same page, if everyone's trying on defense, yeah, you can. You should be able to field a good defense around those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of playing good defense is having good offense as well. And the Mavericks have a great offense with Luka and Kyrie, and now have three guys around them that are going to, you know, make sure that whatever mistakes happen with Luka and Kyrie can get cleaned up as best as possible. But Vinay, I think that's a good stopping point for this episode. I don't know if you have anything remaining here.
No, these are two huge games against the Warriors. I know these huge games don't stop coming, but, you know, every game is just heated at this time of the season. And the Warriors might be worse than the Mavericks, but a desperate team is better than what their record says they are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're fighting for their lives right now. Those games are not to be taken for granted, and I do believe that the Mavericks will approach it with the appropriate level of seriousness. But Vinay, appreciate you joining me on this episode of the Mavs Film Room Podcast. Always love your insight, and thanks everyone for listening to this episode. We appreciate your support this whole season, and going to the playoffs is going to be a fun time. So be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Mavs Film Room so you never miss any of our tweets and great content that we put out. It's only going to get better as the playoffs come around. And yeah, you know, we appreciate all your support. So keep it here at Mavs Film Room. Go Mavs. We'll see you soon.